across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2024, you got to like the sun's coming up a little bit earlier, day by day here. It used to be still pitch dark after 7:30, but now you can kind of see out across the field here. Unless you've got a little fog where you are, and we'll find out more about the forecast from Brittany Merlot in just a sec or two. And then congressional candidate Eric Wilson from the 3rd Congressional District will be joining us. Mark Jacob will be along at the bottom of the hour, talk to us in part about a historic newspaper walkout happening in the Chicago area. Dan Schumacher will help us kick off the weekend and see what we've got for sports. But first, let's check those weather conditions. 7 o'clock temperatures include 21 up here in Chippewa Falls, 23 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 20, Wausau 27. Green Bay is at 30 degrees, so is La Crosse, Oshkosh, Madison, and Waukesha, all at 30 degrees right now. And Wisconsin Rapids is at 28. Let's see what the weather picture looks like for the rest of your Friday and into the weekend by turning to Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, you don't take this personally, right? That people are, you know, dealing with rodents rather than scientists?
You know, at first I used to take it personally. Now I think it's just hysterical. Let's see what they got to say.
I had a neighbor post yesterday about their maple tree and all of the sap, you know, is already starting to run there. So I'm like,
oh yeah,
how good a predictor are you really when that tree is going to be, you know, trapped in some kind of 10 below weather, you know, before this is all said and done. So I put my stock in you, Brittany.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh my God, you are a kiss up.
Yeah, oh, listen right? to you. Oh, look, Luke Mathers is behind you, Greg. Look.
He's not behind
the very handsome, hardworking.
And capable.
And capable. Yes, Luke is nothing if not capable. Now we get back to the weekend forecast. Here's Brittany.
All right. So we are looking right now at temperatures in the 20s and 30s, but we've got a wind out of the northeast. It's making it feel more like the teens outside. So keep that in mind. It's a little crisp, a little frosty in some places as you head out the door this morning, but mostly cloudy too. Unless you're up in the Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire, you're seeing some sunshine peeking out, but the rest of the state under mostly cloudy skies, and we are going to stay mostly cloudy for a good chunk of today. A few pockets of sunshine are definitely possible. So I know Jimmy down in Sun Prairie, that groundhog is about to see if he can see his shadow or not. And I don't think he's going to see it. So that would mean an early spring for Madison. But of course, as we take a look at our weather outlook, we are looking at spring-like temperatures for at least the next 2 weeks. So yes, Ooh. The sap in those maple trees are starting to run. I say tap them now because once the buds fill with sap, the tree starts to grow and it's over. So keep that in mind. We do have a possibility of mid-February, some colder air moving in. And of course, some snow potential too. Of course, we don't know how much just yet, but that is in the future. So there is still winter weather out there. No matter what the groundhogs say, we are still in the winter here. Of course, mild spring-like temperatures today, highs in the upper 30s, and then this weekend into the low 40s, and by Sunday, upper 40s once again. Tons of sunshine too.
Just so not typical, but I will take it. I will take it. Others I know would love to get back to a typical winter. And like you said, you'd never have to wait too long. It'll be around.
Exactly.
Winter's not done with us yet. Thanks, Brittany. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Now, another reminder that this week we are checking in with three candidates running in the Democratic primary for the 3rd Congressional District in western and parts of central Wisconsin. We talked to State Representative Katrina Shanklin Wednesday, Rebecca Cook yesterday, and joining us this morning to talk more about the race for Congress is candidate Eric Wilson from the Eau Claire area. Eric, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much having you here and getting a feel for what you're hearing from folks around the 3rd Congressional District, not only as a candidate, but you know how they are perceiving the current Republican incumbent, Derek Van Orden, what kinds of issues are on their minds. But as I did with Katrina and Becca, I wanted to start with just asking you what you've been up to as a candidate in terms of, you know, traveling around the district, any events, any endorsements, anything that people need to know what's new for one of the congressional candidates.
Yeah, what I've been up to. We've been busy. So we have been to just about all of the counties, actually, making sure we're going to Democratic parties, having my own events, really just getting people out that are tired of the normal, tired of the chaos that continues to be in a little bit of both parties, and giving people a fresh perspective to share their concerns, to have someone that's actually going to listen, to have someone that's going to champion to reviving and dealing with some of the big issues that we have. And so what I've been hearing from a lot of people is they're worried about housing. They're worried about it being affordable. They're worried about not having enough in the area. They're worried about healthcare. I'd love to talk about the big healthcare, I guess, issue that we have here in Eau Claire. But that's not unique to Eau Claire. It's something that's across the state, across my district. Rural counties just don't have access to healthcare. And so as someone that has worked in healthcare issues and have family that has medical issues as well, it's an important topic. And so really those two are the big ones. I think we can all agree that Derek is Derek. And we can talk about that a little bit more, but really just getting out there, listening, learning, and being a voice and seeing what can we do. I think there's a lot of times that candidates or even incumbents are saying, well, we can't do that. And I'd like to flip that script and really say, what can we do and how can we do it? Because it's not a matter of if. We all know that we need change. It's a matter of how. And so really focusing on that and problem solving.
And you mentioned as well, when we first talked to you in October, you also mentioned bringing a fresh perspective to things. So clearly that's a theme that you're still sticking with, that again, we've seen plenty of familiar faces running for office at all levels. And do you feel like you're tapping into something where people actually want to embrace somebody new, anybody new, not somebody that they've already seen plenty of times?
Yeah, I definitely think that. I think there's a lot of people that are tired. They're tired of the chaos. They're tired of the bickering, the fighting, the things that just continue. And the cycle just continues if we don't change anything. And so if you want to continue with that, I think there's some great options. But if you want to take a look at doing things differently and fighting for a different way, then I'm that person. I'm not going to be the bully that Derek Van Orden is. I'm the person that's going to be the leader that really makes sure that everyone is considered when I'm making decisions and making sure that everyone has a seat at the table. Because I think that what our community, and I know what myself is craving, is someone that's going to listen and bring people back together. We need to start having conversations, both sides. It's not about sides anymore. It's about how do we protect the American dream, make sure that all Americans have the opportunities that they need. And that's making sure that we're taking care of baseline things. It's making sure that we're taking care of healthcare, housing, education, making sure that people have food on the table and can give the opportunity to their family to build a better life or have a better life, and really focusing on future generations.
As I've been going through the issues with each of the candidates, I've been starting with the prospect of a bipartisan deal to increase border security, which I would be the first to contend is not the biggest issue for voters in the 3rd Congressional District. And yet we hear Derek Van Orden talking repeatedly about immigration and the border. And yet he also earlier this week said that he would be no part of a bipartisan deal now that former President Trump has basically ordered Republicans in Congress to spike any kind of a deal that might actually make things better at the border. So knowing that that is the current incumbent's priority and position, where do you stand on that?
I think we need to overhaul the immigration system. But I agree with you. There are bigger issues here in Wisconsin that we truly need to be fighting for. It's making sure that the Farm Bill brings resources here to Wisconsin. It's making sure that we're tackling the health crisis that we're having here in Wisconsin. It's making sure that we're tackling the housing crisis that we have here. Immigration is important. I think it's actually a key to our country's growth. But I also think that we have other things here that we need to be focusing on. And Derek is just falling in line with the Republicans and with Trump. And I think we need someone that's willing to take a different look at things. And I know he's been very vocal about it. But it's sad because he's not focusing on the constituents and the people here in Wisconsin that we truly do need to impact.
Well, a focus here would involve playing more of a leading role by having that Plum Committee assignment on the House Ag Committee. And instead, while much of the federal budget faces the prospect of a government shutdown, the Republicans basically punted any kind of new ag policy for the better part of a year. And I wonder what you think that says about the incumbent and the Republican majority that they weren't taking up anything directly related to ag policy for at least a good 12-month period.
Derek isn't caring about Wisconsin. Derek's caring about Derek. And that's wrong. And so what we need is someone that's going to be like, this isn't about me. This is about my constituents. This is about representation. This is about fighting for the people of Wisconsin, the people of the 3rd District, and making sure that the Farm Bill does have impact here. It's making sure that there's different things. There's conservation in the Farm Bill. There's insurance perspectives. It's also addressing hunger. And I think that's something that we're seeing here is we have homelessness and hunger increasing in our community. And so if I were on that committee, I would be focusing on making sure that it gets through and making sure that Wisconsin has the resources and is actually getting something out of the bill.
Our guest for this half hour is Eric Wilson. He's a candidate in the 3rd Congressional District in Western Wisconsin, parts of Central Wisconsin. We're going to continue our conversation with Eric in just a moment. First, a reminder that you can sign up for our newsletter. Go over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the banner on top of our homepage. Today's newsletter edition includes a story about a Wisconsin woman growing a tremendous Facebook friends group specifically geared toward Wisconsin women. We'll show you how American Family Field is going to be getting some great big new Jumbotron scoreboards. And there's also an article from me about the anniversary of Social Security. And we're going to talk more about Social Security, Medicare, and the federal budget with Eric Wilson coming up in just a bit. Live across the Civic Media Radio Network from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News Radio. Back in a bit. Central Wisconsin. All right, Eric, let's turn to the prospect of a government shutdown, which seems to have been a constant since the Republicans took over the House of Representatives about a year ago. And the fact that we're still in this weird sense of budgetary purgatory, what does that say about the current condition of majority Republicans?
Chaos. That's the word. It's chaos. And it's true. They aren't focused on the people. They aren't focused on listening or talking. And they're just, are just creating dysfunction. And that's exactly what we don't need and what we can't afford. We're in a critical time of our country. We're in a critical time of the direction of our country, and we need people that are going to listen, step up, work together, and figure out how we can move forward together.
Also, in the area of what should be budget priorities, you know, for Congress, we can talk about healthcare for a moment. We know that the newest statistics are out for 2023, and both nationally and in Wisconsin, there was record sign up for health insurance coverage through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. And the ways that we can either build on that to make healthcare more affordable to families and small businesses, or, as we keep hearing from the Republican side of the aisle, the need to repeal and replace, or simply to repeal. So what are you hearing, and what's your message in terms of affordable healthcare for voters in the 3rd District?
Yeah, we need to do things differently. The only way that I would be okay with repealing it is if we were going to replace it with a Medicare for all. I don't know that expanding it is going to be a long-term solution. I think it's okay to make sure that there's improvement. But really the message that I am running on is Medicare, healthcare for all. We need to make sure that everyone has a baseline healthcare support. You shouldn't have to worry about going to the doctor for a cold and it costing hundreds of dollars. My aunt had a brain aneurysm, and so she has to have MRIs every year, and she just got the estimated bill, and it's $7,000. And so her out-of-pocket is $3,800. And it's my father who has cancer and has his cancer treatments every month, and it's $1,000 for a shot. And how are we expecting people who are on fixed incomes, who may not have a job? We're seeing layoffs. When you have a layoff, you're not going to have access to healthcare. We can't have a system where healthcare is tied to jobs. And it's just not working. When you have big corporations that are for profit, that are sitting in the middle, taking their cut, everyone else gets left behind. And so we need to address it. We need to push harder on it. And we need to have a system that takes care of everyone.
Well, as long as you've framed it that way, let me go ahead and put the ball on the tee. Because I know that with that kind of a position, it's not difficult to guess what the response is going to be, whether from Derek Van Orden or anybody of a conservative bent, is to say, okay, Eric, well, so you're in favor of government-run, socialized, taxpayer-funded medicine for all, so that, you know, everybody gets covered for everything, and my taxes are going to be out of sight with this, socialist government-run healthcare, or, you know, some variation of that. You're going to hear that. I'm sure you've heard it already. How do you tell people more about your position and the benefits of it?
Yeah, it's actually cheaper. We're paying for it anyways. So when people have to go to the emergency room and aren't covered, if you think that the corporations aren't taking their cut or baking it into what they're charging, then I guess that's something we need to talk about. But we're paying for it anyways. The difference is we're paying to a for-profit company in most cases. And so they can charge whatever they want, and we don't really have a say about it. We're seeing the Biden administration there with the 10 prescription drugs that they're pushing back on, or I guess saying, here's our pricing. That's the power that we can have if we all stand together and say, hey, insulin shouldn't cost hundreds of dollars. It should only be $30. And so it allows us as a country, as a people, to determine the healthcare that we deserve. And it actually helps reduce costs. And so it's not this crazy idea. We see countries across the world that have baseline healthcare systems. Some that aren't are growing countries. Being America, being a first world country, we have the resources to do it. It's just a matter of building it out and accepting that. Going back to the American value of taking care of your neighbor, building your community, and that's truly what we need to get back to. And so for me, it's a values based, and I want to take care of my neighbor. I want to help those that are struggling and make sure that everyone has health. If we don't have our health, we can't do a lot of things. We can't be a productive worker. We can't be a productive family member. And so we need to. It's something we need to focus on and address.
On the topic of abortion care, we've mentioned for the past couple of days how Derek Van Orden accuses others of lying about his abortion record, and yet his explanation of it is keeps repeating the same lie over and over, that people who are for women's reproductive health rights somehow favor abortion up to or even after the moment of birth. So it's hard to take his position seriously. But tell folks more about your own view on women's health care rights, what needs to be done and what needs to be done differently than what Derek Van Orden is professing.
Yeah. Women deserve the right to their body. They should be the ones with their doctors making the decision. And so I am all for access to abortions, access to women's health, and support them and say, hey, it's your choice. I mean, it's not an easy choice regardless. And it's to say that he is for abortions after birth is a little silly to me, but it's not to make light of the situation of we have gone backwards. Women had more rights 50 years ago than they do today. And that's disgusting, and we need to fix it. And so I am a huge proponent of codifying the right to an abortion into law. And I think it's something that needs to be done right away. This shouldn't be something that waits.
And then finally, if folks have heard more, but they want to learn more about you, where would you best prefer, whether it's a website or social media or some other way, for people to learn more about your campaign?
Yeah, wilsonforwisconsin.com. It's also on the screen. It's wilsonforwi.com. And it's also the same for my socials, Facebook, Instagram as well. And so I encourage everyone to reach out on social media or through my website. And I'd love to continue the conversation and make sure that your voice is heard, because that's the most important thing to me.
Eric Wilson, thank you so much for the update. Glad we could check in again, and we'll look forward to doing it again very soon.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. And now another reminder that if you want to hear back to all three of these interviews with the candidates, again, we did those interviews on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Just head over to civicmedia.us. and look for the Up North News show page. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Mark Jacob, a rather historic walkout in the Chicago newspaper industry. We'll ask him about that and other media coverage of the day's big stories. That's all coming up next. You're Up North. No, we're not going to do that Groundhog Day movie bit again. Welcome back on this February 2nd, 2024 to Up North News Radio. Mark Jacob joining us now to talk a bit about the way things have been covered in the news and also the people who covered the news, which in Chicago involves something of, I guess, somewhat historic proportions in terms of a newspaper walkout. Mark, good morning. And what all is happening in the Windy City newspaper business?
Well, the Chicago Tribune newsroom staff walked out for a day, which was yesterday. And it's the first time in the history of the Chicago Tribune that's ever happened. They only unionized about 5 or 6 years ago, and they still don't have a contract. For people who are not familiar with what's happened in the newspaper industry, especially in Chicago lately, Alden Global Capital, which is a hedge fund, acquired the Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun, and various other papers. And they're what they call vulture capitalists. I mean, they buy properties, news properties, and they're not really super interested in them sustaining them for decades. They're more, what they do is they jack up the subscription prices, hoping that people won't notice if more money is being taken out of their credit cards or older people who have read newspapers their entire lives and don't want to change their habits. So they take advantage of that to jack up subscription prices, and they could slash the staff so their product is worse. And the Chicago Tribune has, which I used to be a member of, has lost 82% of its staff from 2006 to 2022. So it's a mirror shadow of its former self. And the journalists who are still there are working really hard, and they can't get a deal from Malden Global Capital. So they did this one day strike just to kind of show what they could do and to get people to take them seriously.
It seems that two things can be true at once in this case, that the news business in the internet age did not find a successful paid model right away, gave it all away for free, basically for too long to get people into the habit of putting value in news, good news coverage and paying for it. But at the same time, it can also be true that, you know, hedge funds and others take advantage of that and, you know, again, practice this, you know, predatory behavior toward their own employees, basically take advantage of mistakes of the past, but now they're doing things that, you know, can't simply be pinned on, you know, decisions that were made 20 years ago. These are decisions being made now that are hurting, you know, journalists, and they're hurting the communities that they cover.
Right. And you know, it's obviously it's a special industry, journalism is, because it's important to our democracy. You know, getting the public informed, you know, with actual facts is by trusted and professional people is super important. I mean, in the journalists I worked with at the Tribune, you know, they knew how to pour through records for months at a time to find out a couple facts that were important to people. I mean, the level of work and the level of investment is incredible. And so when you have an owner who doesn't really care about journalism, you're in big trouble. And that's what we're seeing more and more. And you know, even the news outlets that still exist, you know, and I know in Illinois, you know, 1/3 of the newspapers have closed in the last couple of decades. And it's pretty much the way it's been nationwide. And so it's really important for people to subscribe to their local news outlet, I think. And you're totally right that people were in the habit of getting things for free, and then they ask people to charge for them, and then they give them less of a product. And so that's a vicious cycle. And, you know, I don't blame the internet. I blame human beings' reaction to the internet. The industry really failed to realize what was happening and take advantage of it in a positive way.
Oh, let's talk about humans and their interaction with the internet by moving to our next topic, and that is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel discontinuing their comment section, to which I personally would say, what took so long? But as one of the executives wrote, no one should have to listen to a few people standing bravely, sarcasm, behind fake names, lob racist or misogynistic taunts at them. A forum for ideas should not involve running debates on whose mother does what to whom. Allowing that only elevates bad behavior and only empowers bullies. And again, while I feel for the folks at the Journal Sentinel, some of us saw that 15 plus years ago, and we, you know, we were accused of being undemocratic with a small D, you know, if we didn't mind if comment sections were shut up. But basically, it's because, Mark, you can't possibly monitor it enough for the few to grow some flowers where so many would like to dump truckloads of manure.
Right. And there's actually a point of law here where news organizations online were allowed to be considered platforms, not publishers. So they were not responsible. Like if somebody, you know, posted on, you know, on some comment section that I had robbed a bank, I would really have no recourse because I couldn't sue the news organization because they're not responsible for something what someone posts because they're a platform. And that kind of get out of jail free card for news organizations meant that they allowed these vicious comments, and, you know, and then belatedly, maybe in a couple hours, took something down if somebody, you know, alerted them to it. I was when I was in the news business, I always thought that was reprehensible, and I would say it too. And I felt like if you're going to do comment sections, you need to be reading every one of them before they go up, and that's doable. I mean, you know, they could do it, but that would be an investment of personnel that, you know, the news industry will not do today.
Oh, no. I mean, it would take so much. I can say that even from my very first experience with this was when I was still with Channel 13 in Eau Claire. And we're going back to like 2004 now at this point, when comment sections were relatively new, when news coverage on the web was relatively new. And we did a nice feature piece on a well-respected business leader. And after the 10 o'clock news was over, I was looking at the comment sections, and there somebody puts in something about how, oh, this person, you know, was sleeping around and, you know, can't believe that he hasn't gotten caught yet. And I thought, well, you have to take that down. So I did. Of course, I come back the next morning and somebody's put it back up again. Right. You cannot possibly. And that was before these things called bots, you know, where you can put 10,000 of the same comment on something. It is just not a sustainable model for a public forum. We all would have loved if everybody had behaved themselves and had this nice discourse. But like you said, that's simply not how humans, you know, adjusted to the internet.
Yeah, the worst one I remember at the Chicago Tribune was we had some story about a flooding of a Jewish cemetery. And we actually had people posting, yay, hey, what a great thing. Oh, aren't we happy about that? I mean, it makes your brain explode to see what kind of some people will crawl out of the slime to post. And so it's a good move by the Milwaukee newspaper. I'm glad they're doing that because, frankly, Pat, though, I would rather that they allow this discourse but monitor it so the horrible stuff doesn't go up. But that's, you know, as I said, it's just impossible from a staff perspective.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, it is. Won't dwell on this too much. It seems to be a thing every week, but I did notice people reacting to the fact that ABC News this week did another voter story saying that it's important to know why 72 million people supported him last time around. And Jennifer Schultz writes, look, 81 million people voted for Joe Biden in 2020. Where's the ABC story talking to Biden voters? This is, I can't believe I'm still saying this in 2024. This is still a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I actually talked to Jennifer about that. And she asked me kind of why I thought that was, why this obsession, especially from the two coasts, the news organizations on the two coasts, why they're obsessed with going to diners and talking to Trump voters. And my view is that they don't understand Trump voters at all. They're just, they're in their coffee shops on the, you know, in New York and LA, and they think this flyover country is just a giant mystery. And so because it's a mystery, they have to like launch some anthropological mission to go find out who are these strange people and what are they doing? Well, you know, I used to live in Arkansas and I have people know in my family from various political stripes and I understand I think I understand Trump voters, and I don't think they're any more mysterious than, you know, leftists or independents. I mean, this obsession with going to every diner in America and talking to every Trump voter for yet another story that says pretty much the same thing, which is that that the propaganda has been successful and that their minds have been taken over by Fox News. I think it's tiresome journalism. It's just idiotic.
And honestly, it is a parallel to the comment section. And it's not that journalists shouldn't interview, you know, quote unquote, real people. There's a place for that. But I would much rather see more coverage of the policies, the positions, the lies or the truths that would inform these voters rather than asking them, what do you think today? You should be wanting to inform them today. I mean, that's
right.
That's my two cents on it.
Yeah. And I think just smarter journalism would be to find, you know, different demographic slices, like talk to Trump voters who are in the medical field and have to administer vaccines but may not believe in them, or talk to Black Trump voters. That seems like, since there are so few of them, that seems like a more interesting story. But, you know, but talking to the same old white folks in diners in small towns is not, it just doesn't break any new ground. So show some imagination. And also, I don't see the same kind of thing with Biden voters. It just seems like they're not, because they understand Biden voters. That's the thing. That's the real kind of embarrassing truth here is all their friends are Biden voters. So, because actually, you know, when you look at it demographically, among college graduates, there are many more Biden voters than Trump voters and various other kind of upper income levels. So these journalists who are, you know, part of the elite, you know, we went to a big journalism school and we work in New York City, people, they understand Biden voters, so they don't assign those stories. you know, it's more of this personal curiosity thing that they do.
You have another edition of Media Misses, a short video with Stephen Beschloss, and you take up a political piece that assures folks 4 more years of Trump wouldn't turn the U.S. into a dictatorship, and you write, excuse us for not being assured at all. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, this is a Turkish journalist who's now at the Brookings Institute, and she says, well, you know, I saw it happen in Turkey, and it took more than 4 years, so if Trump gets reelected, we don't have to worry. He can't create a dictatorship in 4 years, which is, you know, idiotic. I mean, she says it's a bad thing. We got to work against Trump's authoritarian ways. So good for her. But this assurance is wrong. And she says there's no need for panic. Yeah, there is need for panic. People need to be very concerned, and they need to do things about it. And this idea that it's going to play out the same way here as it did in Turkey is stupid. I mean, if you look back to Nazi Germany, you know, Hitler got an appointed chancellor, didn't even win an election. He got appointed chancellor. And within a month, the Reichstag fire happened. And within another month, the Enabling Act was passed, which gave him near total power. So, and by less than 6 months, he had banned every political party in Germany. So this idea that there's some model for how dictatorships take over democracies, and we got, you know, don't worry about it, it takes more than 4 years, is very unhelpful. It's the kind of assurance that if you believe it, you could be very regretful that you believed it.
Let me close on a positive note here. You reposted something on your Twitter feed that said, if anyone wonders why anyone would still be a journalist, it's to write paragraphs like this. And it's a great paragraph where somebody says he did not donate or pledge $11 million to AIPAC, even though he was listed as a donor. They showed the documentation with a wire transfer, and so the other person stopped responding. It's like you said before, it's that kind of investigating to get right to actual truth that tells you why people still want to go into journalism today.
Right. And it's knowing that you get lied to. I mean, this is what the great realizations when you're a young journalist is that people will just plain lie to you, and that you better go check it out. But it's hard to find the facts. I mean, the great journalists I've worked with, they spend a lot of time trying to find paper, trying to, you know, FOIA, emails, all the ways, the professional ways that professional journalists find out fact. It's not just repeating crap that you saw on Fox News, which is a lot of what Twitter is.
That's exactly it. No baby birds allowed. Do the actual fact digging. Mark Jacob, thank you so much. As always, have a great weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right, coming up next, Dan Schumacher, and we'll head into the weekend talking about what's up for sports. You're up north. I got you. Dan Schumacher joins us now. He and Greg Bach always kick off our final segment of the week with a little Grateful Dead. What do we got there today, gentlemen?
I don't know. What do we got, Greg? What was it?
This is New Minglewood Blues.
You bet.
There was discussion over the commercial break about whether Dan has bought his tickets yet to see Dead & Company at the Sphere, the big giant golf ball in Las Vegas. I assume both of you will want to travel to your new Mecca at some point.
I do want to go see a show there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty incredible. I knew somebody who saw U2 there about a month ago. And it was incredible, they said. He said you get so distracted because of the amount of light show that goes on. The whole place is like one big video screen, you know, inside and out. It's a $2 billion venture in Vegas to do this. So the Dead will be there for 17 dates over 2 months. So it's the new wave where they call it residency. They call it, Greg?
Yeah.
Residency.
Yep.
So it's no different than what Sinatra used to do.
Wayne Newton. Newton's Vegas anymore.
They've been doing it since Las Vegas was taken over.
Yep. Yeah, it's just the venues are way more expensive now. Yeah. You can't talk sports without noting that Corbin Burns is gone. The Orioles got him in a trade with the Brewers last night. The Brewers get left-hander DL Hall, infield prospect Joey Ortiz, and a draft pick. And the Orioles get the 2021 National League Cy Young Award winner from a team that no longer has Corbin Burns and also let Brandon Woodruff become a free agent. Dan, I know you're more of a Cubs fan and you went and got Craig Counsell, but even a Cubs fan probably has to feel a little something for the Brewers heading into this year.
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they got rid of their manager. They're trading away their best player. I mean, they better get, I don't know what they got for Corbin, but it better be monumental in a rebuilding structure type deal.
They got two players and a draft pick.
Yeah, and money from, you know, all the taxpayers for, you know, major improvements to American Family Field. So you might be watching a loss, but you'll see it now on two Jumbotrons that are in the stadium. So
it's gonna be like your grandma's house. There's gonna be a Jumbotron on top of the Jumbotron.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. The other one is over the right field bleachers. So I mean, it looks a little odd as I was looking at the mock-up, but. Hey, you got to make those games an event, especially if you're watching a game that's not going the way that you'd like it to go. So we will
Pat,
see.
Pat, do we have any snow on the ground at Lake Wesota?
No, we have nothing. We have lost Neither what remains. We. Yeah, there's enough ice on there that some folks still feel like they can walk across it. And I posted on my social media feed a video I took of somebody walking across from the Lake Wesota golf course, walking across just that whole bay that's in front of my place.
Yeah.
And then for the background, instead of a song, I picked up a George Carlin routine about there sure are a lot of stupid people in the world. And I thought it might time out to him going through the ice, but he lived this time. But
well, there's lots of cancellations. As you know, the big tournament there on Lake Wesota has been canceled for ice fishing.
Jigs up. Yep.
The place up here, places all around here, they've canceled. But there's still knuckleheads to go out on the big bay and ice fish. They walk very slowly out there. But
walking slowly, that'll defy gravity.
Yeah, exactly.
If the ice is thin, good luck
you
with
see,
that,
if you
guys.
Walk slowly, gravity won't get you. That's why.
Yeah, like,
but it is pretty amazing how it hurts the economy up here when you don't have the ice.
Oh,
I am genuinely worried about the Hayward area. I know that there is snow on the Birkebeiner trailhead. But, you know, there's not much else. And I'm, you know, again, I don't want to get ahead of myself with what's going to happen with the Berkey, but I'm concerned. Yeah.
We had one of the guys, Sean, their communications director, and he said flat out in the interview, is like, we might have to cancel it. We're going to make the announcement because we don't have the manpower to shovel snow from the forest to the, so it might be canceled.
Yeah.
You know, I know they brought in snow in the past downtown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Into the finish line in that area. But to get it out in the woods and do that, I mean, there's just nothing to work with either. I mean,
no, there's not. So if you can't do the outdoor sports, you concentrate on the indoor. And the indoor sports scene, not good for the Badger men last night. Since the year 2000, when Wisconsin's been leading by 15 or more points at halftime, their record is 120 wins and zero losses. It's now 120 wins and one loss after Nebraska erased an 18-point second-half deficit to beat the sixth-ranked Badger men 80-72 in overtime. I think they were getting ahead of themselves, anticipating that matchup in Madison with second-ranked Purdue on Sunday, Dan. That happens to teams.
It does. But I'll tell you what, Badger athletics is hot, to be honest with you. I mean, you've got men's
hockey teams.
Hockey teams are in the top 10.
Top four for the Badger men, top two for the Badger women. My good. And you know what else I want to ask you about was, speaking of college hockey, the River Falls women. Last I checked, 21-0.
Yep.
With two games to go.
They were just here in Ashland last weekend and we played hard, but they're the number one team in the nation. They've had a long history of success, and I think this might be their year that they win that national championship in women's hockey. They're just too strong, too fast, and too big, which is weird to say for a women's sport, but they have some big, tall ladies on that with long reach and can really fire the puck. So I watched them firsthand last weekend, and they're a fun group to watch.
I'll bet. The Blue Gold women are ranked 7th in the nation. The Blue Gold men ranked 14th, and UW-Stevens Point ranked 8th in the nation. Back to the Badgers. The Badger men take on 9th-ranked Minnesota at the Kohl Center tonight and tomorrow. The Badger women are also playing at home at Laban Arena against 10th-ranked St. Cloud State in a Saturday-Sunday series. Mentioned the Badger men will be hosting Purdue on Sunday. Let's see. We've got the Marquette men are next at Georgetown tomorrow. So that gets you up to date on that. And the Bucks, they are in Dallas on Saturday. 0-2 right now under Doc Rivers. Anybody ready to sound some alarms?
I think it's interesting. You know, another interesting moves that the Bucks have made along with the Brewers. It's kind of a head scratcher, but yep. You know, we haven't talked about Pettis football. And how about last weekend's game? I mean, I think Dan Campbell should never go to Vegas to bet on anything. boy, two times in a row he had a chance to get points on the road and he chose to go for it. That's a tough one to try to explain.
That's been the big debate this week is you know, if you've got this go for it mentality, at one point you kind of have to check yourself based on the situation. But we're gonna have plenty of time to talk up the Super Bowl as well, because I mean we didn't even get to Taylor Swift. Which is a good thing. We'll get to all that.
You're
some other
fine,
time.
Dan. It's fine.
Oh my God. Dan, you head into the weekend. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you a little later.
See you guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. Laughing Tap. Going to be some great shows today this weekend.
Heck all right.
So enjoy all of that as well. Enjoy your weekend, folks. Thanks for joining us. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. See you Monday.